Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Cyber Society podcast. Let's face it, the future is now. We're living in a connected cyber society, and we need to stop ignoring it or pretending that it's not affecting us. Join us as we explore how humanity arrived at this current state of digital reality and what it means to live amongst so much technology and data. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Black Cloak provides concierge cybersecurity protection to corporate executives and high net worth individuals to protect against hacking, reputational loss, financial loss, and the impact of a corporate data breach. Learn more at blackcloak.io. RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com.
And we are off and running, Marco.
Sean, good morning, good evening, good night, wherever
good
you
morning,
are.
Good morning, good evening, good night. Are you sleeping?
I don't know. Sleep talking? I don't know. Let's see if I can make sense anyway, or not.
Exactly.
Well, I'm going to try to make sense, but this is a complicated topic that, unfortunately, we don't talk, I think, enough about. And today in the Cyber Society, we're just going to talk about that because we go against the current.
Exactly, exactly. And tough topics are hard to discuss sometimes, and it's the fear of the unknown, right?
Not knowing diversity.
Exactly, not knowing what the other might be thinking or how they're thinking can be, challenging for some folks. So. Which you could probably hear it in my voice now. This is a topic that we care deeply about. We don't have all the answers, as usual. Therefore, we bring some amazing guests to join us to have these conversations. And I'm thrilled to have Becca Laurie Hector on with us today. Good morning, Becca. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being with us. And maybe you're the right person, without the maybe, I'm sure, to help us understand a little bit more about this topic, and I think it's time to unveil what the topic is. It was inspired by a book that you would tell us a little bit about, but you co-wrote with a few people, and is about Spectrum Woman, which is the title, and it's walking to the beat of autism. And the reason why this fits into the cyber society is because, as we usually discuss, the kind of topic on this channel are about how technology is affecting our society, how the future is already here. And as many people say from the famous quote, just unevenly distributed. So it's not equally distributed. And I think what is not very distributed in this society too is opportunity for people that are perceived to be a little bit different than others. And I think in this conversation, we will try to put the things together, Sean. Technology, society, diversity, and how one should help the other.
Exactly. And inclusion. Before we get there, though, I want to hear about Becca and what she's been up to. Becca, can you tell us a little bit more about what you're working on, a bit about the book that you co-wrote?
Sure. Well, I am proud to say I'm autistic myself, and I was diagnosed about 8 years ago when I was 36. So that's fairly late in life to get a diagnosis. And when I got my diagnosis, it saved my life, literally. I was 3 years homebound and suicidal at the time when autism appeared in front of me. And I pursued a diagnosis and was able to go from a life that was really uncomfortable to a life that is a thriving life for me. And that took effort and work. And along the way, I met other autistic women, and that's where the book came from. And so I'm really proud to be part of Spectrum Women Magazine, which is an online magazine where it's literally all about being on the spectrum and being a woman. So the things that kind of are specific to us and how we struggle and that kind of thing. And that group of us, of editors and writers on there, decided that we'd put a book together because we didn't have any books out there that were for post-diagnosis. So lots of books out there that will tell you people's stories leading up to their diagnosis. Lots of stories out there about what to do about your kid's diagnosis. Lots of information out there about men on the spectrum, and almost nothing about women on the spectrum. So we decided to compile our experiences into this book. And we each did one or two chapters a piece on these particular topics. We all kind of have stuck together since then. We all still write together. Spectrum Magazine is still going strong. We still edit for that, and all of us are still around. And so it's been received amazingly, this book. It really filled a gap that a lot of us were looking for when we got diagnosed. So that's been really amazing. I've had almost nothing but amazing feedback on the book. So that's been great. And then on top of that stuff, I write other things. I write blogs and articles and op-ed pieces and things like that. And then I also consult so large companies, corporations that are looking for a speaker on the topic or training on the topic, or they're trying to put together some kind of program on disability or disability and developmental disabilities. Something like that. And that's usually where I get paid the most, right, is to do those things. And so I do a very Robin Hood-y type thing where I do that. I charge for that stuff, and I take from those corporations. And then when I'm working directly with autistic adults, I charge as little as I can. Right. And so part of the reason for that is our 85% unemployment rate. A lot of folks of us are either underemployed, or most of us are underemployed or unemployed. So it's hard to ask for money from people you know are struggling, right? And so what I did was, on top of doing all of those things, I do live streams, I do all kinds of educational and resource material things, and I eventually have designed a personal development course, which is designed specifically for autistic adults. And the goal of it is to really learn how to create a life that you don't need a vacation from. Right? A life that you like living, a life that looks like you think your life should look like, not what other people think it should look like, stuff like that. And undoing some of the trauma that we've all picked up over the years. So I do that now. And I'm proud to say that a lot of my professional colleagues sponsor scholarships for that course, so that those of us who can't afford it may also get scholarshiped in. And that's kind of what I do. I try to do as many formats as I can for folks on as many platforms as I can, because everybody learns differently, hears differently, all of those things. And that's pretty much it.
I doubt that's pretty much it, I'm sure. and that was a lot in and of itself. But I mean, what I love about that, Becca, is you're not just talking the talk or writing the blog, you're walking the walk as well. And I suspect there are many people who are extremely grateful and thankful for what you've done, either directly through them or indirectly through the work with the businesses that you work with.
Yeah.
I want to get your perspective on this to kind of kick things into gear. And you can pick the thread you want to pull on, adults versus kids. What some of the differences are there being diagnosed early versus later in life. I know we as humans, we tend to put other people in buckets, right? They're men versus women, autistic versus not, white versus black. And eventually you end up with a really small bucket of folks that think they don't fit anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Because they've been segregated so much. So I'm wondering if being a woman on the spectrum is even harder. I know the answer, I'm sure, than a man. But so adult versus kids, men versus women, I don't know if they're...
Well, it's all, right? Well. It's a big mishmash. And a lot of it just comes from the history of autism. And that is that when we were, for example, when I was growing up in the 80s, and in that time period, we were really about buckets. We were like, no, you belong in this bucket over in that school and on that bus, right? So we really separated people. Anybody who was different in a disabled way went to a different school, right? And we didn't touch them. You could get the cooties and all of that stuff. I mean, that was the attitude about disability when I was growing up, right? And historically at that time, autism was still fairly new. Not much was known about it. And what folks were looking for was this stereotypical white boy who causes behavior problems in the classroom and doesn't speak, right? That was what you were looking for if you were looking for autism. If those boxes didn't get checked, it wasn't autism. So for me, I was immediately off that list as a girl, right? They weren't looking for girls at all. And the other problem is I was always the speaker. I was on the opposite end of things. I was hyperlexic and hyperverbal, meaning I was always reading above my grade levels and way above my age level. And I was also always speaking at that level. And the problem with that is everyone thinks it's really cute and adorable when you're a child, right? And the older you get, the more difficult you become when you're like that. And so as I was kind of growing up and growing into myself, there was definitely something quote unquote wrong, right? There is an awareness of an uneven profile. There is an awareness of struggles in some areas, not struggles in other areas. There is definitely awareness about my behavior. And the thing is, my behavior didn't fit in that autism category, right? My behavior was, she's quiet all the time. She's always reading material, not for class. She's always by herself. She's right. And so those were the things. And so as a girl, well, that makes you a very good girl, right? You're a quiet little girl. You're keeping to yourself. You're reading and not bothering anybody, right? And so as a little girl, that behavior wasn't flagged as necessarily bad, just odd. And so what people ended up doing for me was looking for all the different ways that they could address what my struggles were. And while they were doing that, I was continuing to grow as a person and have social experiences and all of those things. And none of them were good. I was getting a lot of negative feedback from the outside world, from teachers, from my peers' parents, right?
Rebecca, can I stop you just a second? Because I think that it's very important to look at your personal experience and especially to look even, we could look even back further in the past of the perception of this. But let's jump, if you don't mind, to what has changed now? I mean, you know that we are about technology as well on the magazine, and that's definitely one of the angle that, you know, society has changed a lot. Some people like to look back and live in nostalgia and say, well, life is always was better before. I think for a lot of people, it's better now.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, way far from it. But what has technology, especially the internet and social media, putting together different niches of people that they may have been lost in the little village, in the little town where they used to live? And did it help? Did it damage? What did technology do for you?
For me personally, it's a different story. For my community, there was a lot done. It made a huge difference for the community. We are a bunch of folks that really aren't too excited about going out into the world because it tends to be very loud and overwhelming. And so we were kind of the first group of people that were online all the time, right? We were on the forums when they were still just text forums, and we were doing things like that out there in technology land. And so as kind of technology developed and it became more of a social place for people to be, our community really began to thrive. So if you go onto Facebook, for example, it's an old platform now, but when it first came to be, it was one of the first places where autistic people could create groups and we could all start to meet. And we could all start to have conversations no matter where we were in the world. And so if you go on Facebook now, you'll see endless groups for autism, endless groups, endless pages, things like that, because that's where we started as a community. So up until then, it was a lot of professionals talking about us, right? And when technology came into play, suddenly we were allowed to be part of that conversation. We were a voice in that conversation, though we had to fight for that for a bit. So technology kind of gave us community in the first place. And then technology continues to assist our community in huge ways, right? First of all, it's normalized using a device to communicate, right? So for those of us in our community who are non-speaking, they use what we call an AAC device, which helps them to communicate. It looks like an iPad. It has pictures for some. Some folks have actual words. And they put it all together, and then a mechanical voice says the words out loud for them, right? So that the rest of the room can be comfortable, that they can audio hear what they're supposed to be hearing, right? And so because of that, AAC, you know, was really useful in our community, and it was sort of an oddball until all of a sudden everybody's walking around with their cell phones in their hands, right? And everybody's texting to communicate and messaging to communicate, right? So suddenly that becomes more normalized, right? And more normalized to use a device to communicate. So that was one immediate way that we started to see differences. And then even more so, as we continue on into technology and we're becoming more as a society reliant on, and technology has become more incorporated into our daily lives, right? That has also normalized using those things for your daily living, which is something that is also helpful for autistic folks. And then as we move even further to right now, and we're looking at the COVID pandemic situation, technology is continuing to assist our community. As the world went remote, finally, there was an opportunity for a bunch of us who had been, not just in the autism community, in the disability community as a whole, begging for remote work because transportation is something that keeps us from the job often. And we just wanted remote work because we know we can do it. But until COVID, nobody let us do it. And so now
the opportunities are there now.
Yeah.
So there's that perfect computer job.
Yeah. Or any job.
Well, that was the point that I was trying to make.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about, so I think technology is giving you opportunity to kind of self-select your own buckets, your own groups, your own mm-hmm. tribes.
Right.
Yet I suspect you still run into some challenges with what you're able to do and not able to do, especially when it comes to work.
Yes. I think we all have to remember that the autism doesn't take our humanness away, right? So every autistic person is different, just like every human being is different. And so our skills and strengths are in different areas, right? And the first place that anybody ever saw us having any value whatsoever was in the technology realm. We were the bug finders. We're the hackers, right? And so the first employment place that opened to us because of technology was the technology field. And places like Google, who have amazing developmental disability programs. They have amazing disability programs. They support their workers, period, right? And that attitude was new too, right? And that is a really useful attitude for folks on the spectrum. But I would say more than anything, the remote capabilities that technology has given us is going to be the most important piece of our employment puzzle coming up.
So the risk here is that then you're going to get, from being cornered in one angle, you're going to get cornered in another angle. Now, it may be a lot better because there are opportunities, but then are you going to become, they're all good with computers, so that's the only thing they can do. Because, you know, society is really quick to decide black and white. So tell me about this. When something become good, but then it may stop there. Because society feel like, okay, we've done enough. Mm-hmm. Now let's keep them separated anyway.
Right. Well, that's exactly it, right? We're still a them. That word them, right? It's always an us versus them. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is we get into, there's an opening, right? There was no opening before. Now there's an opening in technology. And just because human beings like to label, and we like to be able to categorize things. Our brains do that naturally, right? We want to understand something. So we start putting labels on it so that we can understand it. And yes, autistic people can be good at computers, and there are a bunch of us who love it and who can do it in their sleep, right? But there's another like 70% of us that don't do computers or can do it, right? Like everybody else, of course I can do it and I can probably figure it out. Things aren't that complicated anymore, but that's not my calling, right? I'm a much better writer than I am when you put me on, you know, the back end of some kind of JavaScript. I'm not going to be able to do anything. And so it's really this idea that we don't want to get pigeonholed. I mean, and I think nobody wants to get pigeonholed, right? That you want to be more than just this one piece of your personality. And I think, though, we have to be honest and we have to be real about the current workplace. And the fact is, you do need a certain amount of computer skills to be in the workplace right now, right? You can't say, I don't know how to do that, right? Or I can't open Word. Can you imagine going into a workplace now and saying, I can't open Word, I don't know how to use it? You'd never get away with it now. So in a sense, you know, that part of us that is good at computers, right, or understand or have the patience for the details and all of that, will continue to help us, right? The thing is that what we need to do is kind of expand how the world sees us, expand the way we are seen. And unfortunately, that's the way the world works. We can't talk at people and expect them to change. We need to show them, right, that it's real. And until you can show them and until your voice is loud enough and the differences are apparent and you're proud of them and you shout about them and you reclaim your words and all of that stuff, people are going to pigeonhole us and shove us into that space. And so a lot of us had hoped that what would happen is we'd get into this tech space, right, as software designers, as bug fixers and all of that. And eventually we'd be hired up, right? Eventually we'd get into management, right? But that doesn't happen. And that's the problem, right? That's where we are. Yeah. It's the capacity that people see us at, right? Oh, you're autistic, so you'll only get this far. We'd never consider you for that, right? Yeah. And so that's the pigeonhole, is that, yes, you can find the bugs, but we don't want you, you know, telling other people how to do it.
So
right? You can't move up.
Yeah, so a couple things, Becca. So first is maybe a comment that you may have another comment on, which is, in early days, didn't want to be diagnosed. Well, maybe people just didn't get diagnosed properly, but perhaps now one wouldn't want to be, so they don't get pigeonholed, and find themselves selected out of something. But I'm wondering if the real challenge moving forward, and maybe a view from you into the future of where communities and technology can help with this problem, is communication and an understanding by all folks. You said you have to show and demonstrate what you're capable of. Mm-hmm. How does a community come together and leverage technology to demonstrate and maybe bridge the gap of the understanding between us versus them?
We create our own. And that's the space we're in right now. We have a lot of folks as entrepreneurs creating their own businesses, becoming their own bosses. We have a lot of folks who have started their own nonprofits, a lot of folks who have started greater corporations that outside of the autism field. And what we need is folks doing that, folks doing like what I'm doing, creating supports for adults and, you know, like just creating, right? There's nothing. And in order for us to get it right, we need to create it for ourselves. And in order to show people we're capable of being in charge of things, we need to create those things for ourselves, create those systems, support, services, because we aren't being heard, right? So there's two choices. You either say, okay, we aren't being heard, we need to be louder and pushier, or we can just do it ourselves and show you it needs to be done, right? And so a lot of us are just saying, you know what, you don't think I can run a business? You don't think I can be your manager at your business? I'll show you I can run my own business of my own employees, right? And by my own standards, whatever those standards are. And so that's what's happening, is where there's been a lot of employment creation by autistic adults, where we've created our own businesses. We all have our own LLC or something like that. Or we have a lot of... I don't know how to describe them, like small businesses where folks are working on like food and things, where they'll make maybe cookies, stuff like that, and it's their own little shop. So that's what we're having as a kind of a backlash of that pigeonholing, right? Is folks just saying, okay, we tried to explain to you what we need in the workplace. We've tried to explain we'd like equality in the workplace. We try to explain we have value, but we don't get heard. And so what we do is we create it ourselves and show people. that we
have. So, Becca, is this working? I know it sounds like a stupid question in terms of, you know, I'm sure it's working, but is it changing the perspective? Is it changing the public opinion? Is the people that regularly put the people that are different in a corner, once you show them that, mm-hmm. okay, fine, I'll do my own thing, do they change their perspective? Do they realize it? Or is still like a way to say, yeah, sure, let them do their own thing?
I think right now it's both. I think a lot of us are being kind of poo-pooed or the opposite, really, and being inspiration porn for people, right? So they help out with these small businesses, they help the disabled person. But in a sense, it is working because we are visible, right? I have right. businesses and corporations and people I could name who are running nonprofits right now, who are openly autistic, who are working in that field, right? I can do that. So because we're all doing that and becoming more visible, we can all be used as examples, right? I can now go into a workplace and say, well, sure, I can run your nonprofit. Look at X, Y, Z, they're all running their nonprofits, right? And I didn't have that before. So that part makes it change. The other part is that other things are happening in the world that may assist us in moving them forward faster. And that is that we have this big push for diversity and inclusion right now, right? In corporate America, lots of diversity and inclusion programs, tons of them everywhere. Everybody wants to make sure their hiring platform is fair and politically correct and all of those things. But they're not yet including disabled people in their diversity and inclusion platforms. Mm. So while that's going on in business and there that sort of that slow change is happening inside business where, oh, yeah, we do need diversity. Oh, wait, we're not including all the diversities, right? That conversation. And at the same time, autistic folks are showing up in droves to say, we're capable. We have value. Look, we're doing it at this small cookie shop, but I'm doing it. Right. Or I started my own nonprofit and now I'm a 501c3 and I did all that paperwork myself. And did you do yours? Right. And that's a showing, right? So we show our value. They're also changing at the same time. And if you're a good advocate, you get your timing right and you jump in when they're ready, right? And move us forward again. So yes, it's changing. Is it ever fast enough for any human being? No, because that's just not how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suspect that, I mean, diversity, right? For a few years now, it's been a hot topic. It's become a marketing topic for many, and may help in some ways. But I think Marco and I, at least certainly I struggle with how much do you call it out as this needs to be highlighted versus just embrace it all. try to get rid of all the blinders. And I'm wondering, so you said some organizations have diversity and inclusion programs, yet don't include everything. So I'm wondering, and I'm not looking for a name of a company, but have you seen examples of organizations really grasp the idea of diversity and openness and inclusiveness and not continue to put buckets around or barriers around or lines around things?
Okay, I'm going to say something not nice. And it's the truth, right? People don't evolve faster and they won't evolve until it makes them money, right? And so what was happening is that socially people were saying, it's not cool that your companies are all white men, right? That's not cool. You need to infuse that with some coloration in here, right? We need some difference, right? We need to be doing a fair thing. And once companies started getting called out for that, when people would walk into a boardroom and say, and notice for the first time that it's all white men in the room, right? We were beginning to notice and be aware of it. And so I think corporations realized that in order to stay alive, they had to address that or they were going to sink on that one piece, right? So all these big money corporations said, we got to do so, you know, where's HR? Get them involved, right? And we started developing these diversity and inclusion programs. The problem is we were looking at diversity from a race and gender standpoint, right? And that's it. And folks are forgetting to include other kinds of diversity like disability, right? Not just developmental disability. And so all of these companies, they're not, I don't feel like they're doing it from the right place, right? I feel like it was pushed upon them because now society expects us to have some kind of social responsibility. Where's our social responsibility corporate page? And so in order to stay alive as a corporation, they did that. The thing is, if you're someone who is an advocate, if you're someone who is part of a minority group or feels the effects of non-diversity, right? You go, that's my opening, right? Mm-hmm. And you try to jump in, right? And those people that did that, we're seeing that now, right? We're seeing the female CEOs, we're seeing more Black people in corporate positions, right? And in more of the C-level, right, positions. And that's what we want for autistic people, right? We want the same thing. And it happens, it just happens slowly. And you have to speak the language. So when you are wanting to push something further into a corporate, right, like, you know, how far do we push, right? As an advocate, I push till they push me out, right? Because I'm an advocate. As an employee, I say you push till you might lose your paycheck. Because that's what it's about. But it's the pushers and the shovers and the people that throw their resumes in when they really shouldn't or no one's really looking for them that make the difference, right? It's the person that actually gets the chair in the vice president's office that's making the wins. But what we have to do is make sure that it makes money sense to people. Because if we can't make the disability piece make money sense to these big corporations, they won't really envelop it.
Yeah. You know, I completely agree with you. And unfortunately, there is a fundamental issue with our society, which may be just what our society are about. So maybe we're trying to change what you can't change, or it will take so much time. And as you said, do you want to speed it up and start talking money? And that's, mm-hmm. I agree with you. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But the problem, and I would like your opinion on this because I'm really passionate about it. My thought is, until we keep seeing people diverse and we mm-hmm. put them a label, we're going to be a society that is not inclusive. Mm-hmm. You can't say, well, as a company, I have a department for women, I have a department for people of color, I have a department for neurodiverse. That pissed me off because mm-hmm. you should have a company. It's like when you call a CEO, I don't like to hear is a female CEO or is a Black person CEO. Is a CEO. Right. So until the day that we just can look around and don't see differences anymore. And I'm being completely utopian right now because...
Right, of course.
Right? I mean, I hope it's not a utopia because a utopia is never going to happen. But, you know, in an ideal world, that's what I would like to see. And so to wrap this up, I don't know. I feel like, Sean, we would be nice to, and we will have more conversation from different perspective as well. But what is, on your opinion right now, apart from making your voice heard and uses technology to unify and say, look, we're going to show what we can do. But do you ever think like, if we could only have this,
what's the one lever you could change, that
would be really that switch that could really help to speed this up?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think anybody who's on a mission, anybody who's an advocate for anything, anybody who's trying to push any kind of change or anything new, it's an uphill battle, right? Nobody wants change. Everybody wants it to just stay the same because they've always done it this way, right?
Easy.
And so that creating the motivation for change is the hard part, right? You have to get everybody else excited to do it. Or everybody else just going, it has to be that way. So unfortunately, the way that I think business America handles that, it all comes from the dollar bill, right? So what we need to be saying is, if we remove all of these labels and we stop looking to fill these slots like that, we'll have a better company and we'll make more money. Right? That's the way that corporation wants to hear it presented to them. Right? And so what we need to do is say, yes, I would love what you want, Marco. I would love if the whole world just could go, who cares? Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. And as someone who's different myself, I don't really see difference that way. Like, I do, you can't help but see difference, right? Mm-hmm. You can't help but when you notice someone and say, oh, well, I'm white, they're black, I noticed, right? You notice. But the difference between letting it impact your decisions and noticing is what we're working with,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that is the hard part. And that is the stuff that doesn't go away, that kind of lags on for generations, is the thinking pattern, the judgment piece.
Yeah.
And that's what I would love to get rid of, is that judgment piece, like that I meet someone and I immediately need to judge them.
It's the embracing it. Like, you know, I right. love diversity, meaning cultural diversity, languages, anything.
Yeah, all of it, right?
You know, I mean, what? How boring would be the world if we were all the same? I mean, it would
and be. Yet, money and yet, moneymakers love when we're boring because mm-hmm. it's predictable and they can know their stats and they know what their income is going to be. And all right. And the minute we mess with that system, we're messing with their income.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we get into trouble.
Yeah.
Right. And so we start to see instead these micro developments, like these diversity and inclusion programs, like the women's department or the right. We start to see that. And then eventually everyone goes, there's a million departments. Why can't it just be human resources?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And then they go to bed at night feeling good. It's like if you give, you know, $1 to somebody that is homeless in the street, well, you may feel good about yourself, but you haven't changed shit.
For him. Right. And that's exactly it. Right. And that's what we, as autistic advocates, that's what we say behind closed doors. Right. Thanks for letting me, you know, speak at your training for free that you didn't pay me because you gave me exposure. Okay. And that's what we get. I mean, that it is only in the last 3 or 4 years that people in autism nonprofit are understanding that they need to pay the autistics that are working for them. That's how far behind we are. So when you say your dream, I go, yes, Marco, maybe from heaven, you will look down and see that happen. You know,
I'm a dreamer.
Long, right? It's just not probably going to happen in our lifetime.
I know.
So many other things have to happen first. Yeah. Right now, I can't even disclose in a doctor's office comfortably. Okay. If I can't go to my doctor and say I'm autistic and still feel like I'm going to get the best quality care, then I got to start there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, forget, you know, having an autism office at a corporation somewhere. I can't even think about that because I can't even get medical care properly. Right? And then I say, well, if I can't disclose to my doctor, can I disclose anywhere else? Is it safe? And it's not, because people don't understand autism and they don't know the varieties that it comes in, and there's not enough information out there. So then I say, well, maybe I need to push education then. And so we're all trying in our own ways and all these different angles to move the whole thing forward. But the majority of human beings are A, preoccupied with self, right? So if they are not disabled themselves, they could care less, right? And the other thing is that as a society, we're really lazy and we don't like change and we don't want to do all those things because we don't know what's going to happen and it's so risky and blah, so we never do it. Mm-hmm. And it would take something huge, like, you know, what killed the dinosaurs to get us to change.
Especially if you're in a privileged position, in the history of the human, why would you want to change? You want to stay in your privileged position.
Right.
Easy.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Becca. Would you mind repeating all of what you just said? I was thinking about how this affects me.
I was talking about how...
You want to start a podcast again, Sean?
we're really slow to learn. We're slow to change, right? Yeah. And we're asking for is a very big change. And it has to happen on lots of fronts in lots of different ways, basically. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So I'm going to take this opportunity to kind of wrap this up. I feel we can go a gazillion different directions with you, Becca, on this topic. I think a couple of things that I pulled from this conversation is it's easy for humans to see differences and we like to put people in different buckets. It becomes an interesting dynamic when we can't see the differences straight away. And perhaps, like you said, you want to disclose to maybe have a better experience when in fact by disclosing you might have a poor experience. So I think there's some interesting dynamics here, and I think it all boils down to an understanding, because I think the other thing you just said is there are so many variances or differences even within neurodiversity and autism, and that in itself can make it a challenge as well. So I'm hopeful. I know we touched on technology a little bit. I'm hopeful that technology can be used to raise awareness, help educate, perhaps non-disclose where necessary and disclose in the right way when necessary to give a voice and to take away some of the blinders and the preconceived notions that we have as humans.
Absolutely.
Yep. This conversation went way wider than diversity. But you know what? That's, again, is talking about diversity. I think sometimes when you keep creating this bucket, it's not looking at the big picture. And I think what I really appreciate about your position when you talked about the money, you talk about what drives decision and so forth, it's been a very relevant point that applies to any kind of diversity and inclusion. So I want to thank you for that, because I think you can't just address one diversity. You have to address diversity as a one thing. And again, where idealistic is not diverse anymore. So thank you very much. And I hope
thank you,
people
Becca.
Are going to think a lot. Share this conversation and check on the podcast notes. There will be resources. So please, back if you want to share some important and relevant resources for people that can read and participate, please do that, and our audience can find
it. We'll certainly include a link to the book as well. Encourage folks to catch your story amongst the others. And I think Marco said, hopefully folks think about the topic, about the other person and their role in this whole game of life.
RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com. Black Cloak provides concierge cybersecurity protection to corporate executives and high net worth individuals to protect against hacking, reputational loss, financial loss, and the impacts of a corporate data breach. Learn more at blackcloak.io.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Cyber Society Podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.